What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
Tunes for my kids recently. That show has not aged well. All right, honey, let's meet this cast of characters. First off, we have a pig. His name's Porky. And his thing is he has a speech impediment. She goes, what? I go, yeah, he has a hard time communicating with his peers, and therefore he has really low self-esteem. Okay, you don't like that? Well, check it out. There's this mouse, and he's Mexican. She goes, I don't get it. How's that funny? I go, how's that not funny? You heard what I said, right? Mexican mouse? Okay, you don't like that? Well, check it out. There's this skunk. She goes, what's he doing? I go, he holds women against their will. Yeah, they try and get away, but Pepe won't let him. And all the other characters, what they're doing is they're trying to kill one another. You know how in your shows they're all friends? They're not in these ones. They're trying to murder one another. There's this coyote who wants to kill this bird. There's this cat who wants to kill this other bird. Both that cat and that bird also have speech impediments, by the way. If you don't like any of that, here comes the headliner, the main character. You ready to see? There's this bunny, and there's this hunter, who, you guessed it, also has a speech impediment. There's like 8 disabilities. They're all hilarious. And this hunter wants to kill the bunny, except for when the bunny puts on women's clothes. And now he does not want to kill the bunny. No, he is sexually attracted to the bunny. No, sweetheart, you want to turn on Bluey and learn about empathy? Okay, let's do that. That's probably a better use of our Saturday morning.
Yo, so what it is, family? As y'all already know, this is Professor Carl Tone Jones, and you have now stepped in to the office hour, and you know. This is where it goes down then. So, well, first and foremost, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another Philly Friday edition of Fed Life Station at FedLifeStation.com. That's FedLifeStation.com. And also, if you just want to log in and just listen to us and click, you know, on your favorite podcast streaming networks, then you could just shoot in the search for the True Stories Podcast Network, the True Stories Podcast Network, where you can find not just my show, but a bunch of other shows that speak to relevant topics. Some deal with mass incarceration. Some deal with life as, you know, just trying to get back into society. And then you have me. Then you have me. And many people don't know, man, that's Vincent Price. Vincent Price used to be one of those actors who performed in a lot of scary movies, horror films. And Michael Jackson and Quincy Jones got him to actually make that that piece, that sound, that clip that you just heard. They got him to do that for the Thriller video. When Michael Jackson came out with the Thriller album, and he actually performed that just at the end, for the end of the Thriller video. So if you ever watch Thriller, and I know the Michael Jackson movie just came out. I want to see it, but I have a high opinion and a low threshold for bullshit when it comes to dealing with stories that speak about black icons, specifically black men, who, when they were alive, you know, the industry really took some shots at them and did a lot of things to assassinate his character, project, you know, that he was a criminal through false accusations and the worst kind of criminal. You know, somebody that's abusing children. So, you know, Mike never spent a day in jail. And so, and many people have come to his defense. People like Macaulay Culkin, other people, Corey Feldman, they all came to his defense in regards to, you know, the way he would treat children when they would come to his house. So, you know, it's just, I'm going to hold off on the Mike movie. I got to, maybe a date or something, I don't know. But speaking of, though, you know, that first clip that y'all just heard on this one, I'm not sure who the comedian is. I think his name is Dustin Nickerson. Yeah, Dustin Nickerson. And he was doing a bit on how the Looney Tunes cartoons, the cartoons of my childhood, didn't age well. And I thought that was, it was interesting because when I graduated from high school, one of my teachers, I can't even recall which one, gave me this 2-hour VHS tape. That's how long ago it was, y'all. VHS tape. And it had like 2 hours of just like the most racist themes of Warner Brother cartoons, the Warner Brother Network, which produced Looney Tunes. And so, you know, Bugs Bunny, Elmer Fudd, Daffy Duck, and all those different things, even Tom and Jerry, right? And I think that we really did not see, and I mean, and it wasn't just Warner Brothers, it's Disney, my God. Disney took it a step further. Not only with Disney, and Walt Disney was a stout racist. Like, he made no secrets of it. But they would do things like in the art, the digital art. Well, I don't know if it was digital art back then, but in the art that was used for their movies as their movie covers on their VHS tapes and then soon DVDs. And, you know, the artists had some interesting ways of expressing themselves. And it would be sexual private organs drawn into, you know, there would be like pillars. Like, I recall, I forget the one where they were under the sea, the mermaid, the Little Mermaid. If you go back to like 1990, and look at the Little Mermaid in the title, the picture, right? for the cassette or for the DVD, you look at one of the pillars. One of the pillars is actually a drawing of a erect penis, and I'm not making this shit up. And then you start to hear about stuff like Disney had like an underground city, and then you found out that damn Disney does have an underground city. And for a long time, you know, because it's funny, because we talk about the Epstein case and the Epstein files, but they talk about the fact that child trafficking, child sex trafficking, white slavery was taking place, allegedly, in a lot of those different places, like the underground of the Disney World, and I think Disneyland. Disney World was in Florida. Disneyland was in Los Angeles. So that there was some shaky things going on. So, and y'all have heard me talk about that stuff. So, in terms of like those Eyes Wide Shut parties and gatherings and secret societies, I think that's important for us to see like how that's operating now. There's a lot of things out in the open, and not only, you know, not only do they have the people who were at the Epstein Island or involved in the shenanigans in his mansion in Manhattan, or some of the other places, or when he was down in Mar-a-Lago in Florida, right? Down there near the Florida Keys. I think that, you know, we're looking at all these global catastrophes and wars taking place right now. And there was a word that used to draw some attention. And it used to strike fear in a lot of people when they talked about it. And the word was Illuminati. Now, since then, we've been desensitized to the whole term of Illuminati and what that means and who it represents. And we've gotten to the point where we've watered it down so much that now your favorite entertainers, oh, they're all in the Illuminati. And just like when I was, shout out to my brother, Joe Horton, and my other brother, Patrick Irvin, on the Shoulders of Giants. We started talking about the black elites, right? Sigma Pi Phi, and we started talking about how they operate, the black bourgeoisie, not the bougie Negroes, but bourgeoisie. And I made a statement. I said, here's what you need to know. You've probably never met one. You probably never met a member, an active member of the black bourgeoisie. You definitely don't see them in your day-to-day life. So the same thing, but on a much higher regard. The same way you talk about the Illuminati. And I'm bringing it back because it is like you try. People say, well, why the hell are we at war? Or we're helping like Israel. Not just helping Israel, being bossed around as the supposedly the most powerful country in the world, the most powerful military in the world. Why are we being bossed around by a country of 7 million people that's literally the size of New Jersey? Why? You know, in a war that has literally changed the dynamics of global power. Change the landscape in terms of the economy. We are complaining because gas prices have gone up about 50% here. I promise you, this is not the worst. And thank God, apparently this past week, Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister for Israel, apparently they had a heated discussion. And from what we understand, Netanyahu was over there blowing his head. His head, it was exploding. And I promise I'm not going to stay on this too long because we got some other things to talk about. But apparently, Trump is he wants out of this, and he's looking for an off-ramp. And so allegedly, apparently there's going to be a letter written and sent to Iran, basically stating that is signifying the end to hostilities between America and America's military and the country of Iran. And a lot of people think this was endorsed, not just endorsed, but forced by the different Gulf nations over in the Persian Gulf, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, you know, the Arab Emirates, you know, they're thinking that a lot of those countries pressed the United States hard because they were getting hit. When Iran said, "Yo, okay, well let me show y'all what we're dealing with," bro. That's why I'm saying it's going to take a while, because Straits of Hormuz have been locked up. Then you had an American blockade on top of that. Nothing was getting out. Well, very few ships were getting out. Ships carrying oil, ships carrying food stocks, bro. And Iran did something real smart to make sure that they damaged not just the economy, but a reputation of the Iron Dome, which is supposed to be air defense protection, you know, for, you know, against anybody that tries to launch missiles or do flyovers and attack your homeland, you know, with the and perform like a mission or a bombing mission. There's a technology that Israel produces called the Iron Dome, where they were selling for billions of dollars in regards to protecting a country from strikes, military strikes from outside the country. There was a place somewhere in the desert out there in Israel where a massive explosion took place. People saw a mass explosion. A lot of people said, "Well, damn, was Israel testing a nuclear bomb?" But we find in Israel, you know, the report was it was an accident. However, a report, something else got leaked recently, that was a weapons manufacturing plant for specifically the Iron Dome, which was sold to countries all over the world. India wanted one. South Korea wanted some. Like, they had back orders that they were supposed to be fulfilling. It got lit up, allegedly, by ballistic missiles from Iran. And I just look at the time, and it was peculiar, because several things happened. If this is what happened, several things took place. One, knowing that the war was winding down, and there was a possibility that in terms of like the hostile engagements, that they would stop. I thought it was real it was really clever to launch an attack on that specific munitions facility and destroy Israel's ability for at least the next 18 months to produce product for those other countries. Meanwhile, also showing the ineptitude of that particular product, because there were seven missiles that were fired allegedly. Four of them got through. And they were saying something about the area was like about 20 football fields or something like that. I don't know. But it got through. And they did, and they took down key components of that particular infrastructure. So I thought that was pretty interesting, because now there's confidence internationally. All these other countries now look into secondary, including America. The American corporations, American wartime suppliers are pulling up, trying to trying to get in on the fact that nobody has faith that Israel's Iron Dome will actually show real-time effectiveness when, in fact, in real time, it failed. So, so as we move on, right? There were, and I was going to do something. I'm gonna come back to that if we have time, because we got time. So, the rapper Mace, formerly a Bad Boy. You know, they have a show, it is what it is, podcast, him, Cameron, and another young sister. She's the host. Well, she sort of like navigates the show between those two. But I want you to listen to what Mace said about manhood. Not just manhood, but what men who are uncompromised, what they have to deal with. And it's specifically speaking to the black culture. Check this out. Okay, for some reason, this is muted. Hold on. What the hell? Why isn't it? Hold on, y'all. This is not. It was just playing 2 seconds ago. Let me see something. Let me,
Okay. Believe their best chance at success is being ignorant. That, like, you have to do something over the top to be accepted as a black guy. I think that's just the time we're in, right? People are not trying to do smart stuff. And this is, take Stephen A. out of this. Don't take this and try to use this against Stephen A. Use this against black guys, period. I think this is the time we're in. If you're an intellectual, if you're a person that think for yourself, if there's nobody governing your thoughts, if you don't have a handler, if you don't have a person they can call and shut you up right away, then there's certain opportunities you just don't get. And it's not about unruly. It's not about, we just need to know, if we put you on the main stage, we have somebody that can control you. Jaylen Brown is not one of those you can control. Mason Betha is not one of those you can control. Are you getting what I'm saying? So in that
And listen, this is not just in terms of Hollywood. This is not just in terms of this is happening at your workplace. This is happening at, you know, when you have to actually go and in day-to-day life. Like, I have been frozen out of so many opportunities because a lot of people feel like they can't control what I'm going to say. And they're right. They really can't control. I'm not owned and I'm not compromised. So you can't really control what I say, what comes out of my mouth. I know with that in mind, that if it's in a professional workplace, which is why I go to work, it's a means to an end. I do the job and come back home. Nothing more, nothing less, right? But it's the reason for that. And it's because I already know with my mouth, not just my mouth, but just my autonomy. You can't control me. And there are people that would like to, but there's nothing, like, you can't control me. You know, I do what's required, but I've never been a yes man. And I'm not even just talking about work now. I'm talking about outside of that. There are like events and things of that nature. Topics that I've been considered to be like ahead of the class on. I'll just say it like that. I don't get invited to all the reindeer games. So, but I'm saying this to you brothers, man. Understand that an uncompromised black man is one of the most dangerous things in not just America, but the free world. That's why they have to make up so many negative connotations for black men who held power. Look at Kwame Nkrumah, you know, over there in Africa in the Congo, when he was mounting resistance to Belgium and Britain, they sent soldiers in not only to assassinate him, but you have members of MI5, which is Britain's secret service. They have are carrying around like a necklace with a chip of his bone in the necklace, like encapsulized. And yes, what happened to him? They never found the body. His body was dissolved in acid. Just take that into consideration. And Thomas Sankara, same thing. You know, they assassinated him. And when you have black men here in America, we saw what happened when Malcolm was never compromised, right? So they came after Malcolm about 4 or 5 times. They tried to the CIA tried to poison him in Africa. He got back to America, and the FBI prior to was sending poison pen letters through the Nation of Islam to Elijah Muhammad. There was broadcast lies of Malcolm violating certain positions he was told that he couldn't do public speaking. Like, he was told he was suspended from doing public speaking for like 30 days or 90 days, something like that. So back then you didn't have the internet in the 60s, but they were broadcast on the news that Malcolm X spoke at a huge rally in Boston, Massachusetts the other day, knowing that it would get back to Chicago, where the Nation of Islam was housed, knowing it would get back. But Malcolm wasn't even in that city that day. All right, look at what they did to Fred Hampton. Fred Hampton, you know, we talk about Fred Hampton, right? We don't really talk about, he's a great leader and leader of the Black Panther Party, the chairman. We don't talk about the fact that all his accomplishments, he died, they killed him at 21. He was 21 years old. Black men, you cannot, in this world, uncompromised, you are uncovered and dangerous. And don't look to other people to rock with you. You'll start being fed with a long spoon. Ask me how I know. Ask me how. Look what happened when Martin Luther King finally became uncompromised. A lot of y'all don't know, Dr. Martin Luther King, much love and much respect for him, much admiration for him. But there was a time he was taking a check. And we're going to talk about it. Let's talk about it all. He was on Kennedy's payroll. And, with a bunch of others. He wasn't the only one. But, he was on the payroll. When he finally got off the payroll and started going up against the grain, started talking about the Vietnam War, started talking about, the class struggle, when he started talking about the poor man's march that was going to take place in D.C. and all the different things they were going to do to disrupt the political sector that day. They were going to lay on the sidewalk and lay in the streets in front of tanks. All these die-ins and stuff like that, that's a replica of what he was talking about doing in the 60s. They murdered two black men to get him to Memphis. They compromised members of his team. There was a black radical group in the Lorraine Motel that same day. Typically speaking, that radical group would have actually served as a part of Martin Luther King's security detail. But for whatever reason, they were removed from that hotel. His hotel room was moved. Allegedly, Jesse Jackson switched his hotel so that he'd be on the other side of the building, and then there would be a balcony with access. You had four different hit squads out that day to kill Martin Luther King. And then they had a patsy, I believe, named James Earl Ray. But he wasn't the killer. His lawyer actually did the research and wrote the book, The Plot to Kill King. So, you know, as black men, we got to be careful about the compromise. Now, change and shift focus, you know, we have to transition. We have to transition. Right? Hold on. All right. So there's some wild news that's taking place, right? Now, many of you know that two years ago, I covered the murder of one Charles Jones, a.k.a. Julio Fulio, in Tampa Bay, Florida, on June 23rd, 2024. Right? Remember, I covered that a few years ago. That's how long I've been doing this. Man, we've been rocking out. I've been doing this for a minute. So apparently, they caught the five accomplices, right? Those who were accomplices in his murder and execution. One was by the name is, I'm going to give you the names. Isaiah Chance, Sean Gainthright, Rashad Murphy, his brother Davion Murphy, and Isaiah Chance's girlfriend, Alicia Andrews. Now, ironically, the four black men, I can't call killers brothers, sorry. Not when you rock like this. These men were all, you know, given murder one charges, right? Why is it that the young lady, Alicia Andrews, who was, according to the reports, providing logistics, support, and sharing of Fulio's location, why wasn't she convicted of something stronger than manslaughter? And now she's actually back in court right now, you know, asking for a retrial because she believes that she's basically trying to state that she's innocent. Yo, something's not right here. I want y'all to check out. I want y'all to check out my brother, Joseph Ward, covered this case, right? He covered this, and one of the things he covered in this was, you know, Sean Gainthright, who, you know, came from a pretty decent family. His mother and stepfather were both military, single home. He would be considered like an army brat or whatever because he's been all over the world with his family. Basically, now he's, you know, this is his, they're at the sentencing phase. They were at the sentencing phase, and he was trying to avoid the death penalty. So one of the, they had a prison expert come out and testify into, and I'm gonna turn this down for a second, to testify about the benefits of giving him life in prison versus putting him on trial for, giving him the death sentence. So I want y'all to check this out real quick because, I mean, there's some other things about this young guy that that wasn't revealed. You know, this wasn't his first attempt at shooting Julio. He actually shot him one time before at a gas station, shot him in his foot. In the year previous to that, he was also linked to murder for hire in Alabama. So, but check this out.
And based on Mr. Gathright's age, physical abilities, things like that, do you think that the prison would benefit from him in a work capacity if he were sentenced to life without parole?
I say yes. With my experience, not only just in classification, but as a former warden and even as a jail administrator, he's someone that's young, he's healthy. In reality, we need that labor. We need that sweat equity. And we will put him out there to work because we do have an aging prison population, jail administration. We have that. So we put these young individuals to work and get some sweat equity out of them since they are young and actually can do the work.
So that's how far I want to get to make sure that y'all heard that. Get that sweat equity out of them, right? Get that sweat equity out of them, you know, for the sake of time. So remember, for these young men, their prison system, their prison sentence began in their heads and their minds and their ideologies long before they hit the courtroom. Yeah, they're going to get that sweat equity out of them. See that? That little clip, right? Somebody clipped that up and that went viral over the internet. And people are like, oh no, I can't believe he said that. What the hell you thought went on in prisons? What did you think went on in prisons? You thought it was a volleyball tournament? Look, their minds were already trapped in destructive programming and their parents had a lot to do with that programming. Their environment had a lot to do with that programming. The failed adults around them had a lot to do with that program. Now,
what he's really speaking to is the failure of the village to produce good crops. And I want to read something else too. Shout out to Joe for that coverage because I've been trying to find a lot of that. I've been trying to find those clips. So thank you, Joe, for clipping that up, brother. Appreciate you. But I want to go back to what the prison expert actually said, though. Because he was talking about that sweat equity. We need those young people for sweat equity, right? So in other words, when you, a little more of what he said was when you go and you get life in prison, they basically have access to you for 60 hours a week. Labor. You work 60 hours a week and you work 6 days out of the week, right? You don't have access to a single bed or a single room or just a roommate. They put you into like, you go into like a platoon sort setup, like a military army platoon, where you have a bunch of beds in the room and you're sharing that room with a bunch of other inmates. Now, and Florida ain't no joke. Florida and Texas and California, three places you don't want to go to jail. All right. Now, in addition to that, all right, I want to point out something. What that man described was the 13th Amendment. All right? The 13th Amendment. Let me explain to y'all what the 13th Amendment is. The 13th Amendment ratified on December 6th, 1865, formally abolished slavery throughout the United States and its territories, ensuring that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as punishment for a crime where the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. All right? And I've been explaining this for years as a history teacher, college professor and so forth, and even doing workshops and presentations. When you got the 13th Amendment, many people said that this country abolished slavery. No, this country legitimized slavery in all of its states and territories. And this is why if all you have to do is be convicted of a crime, and you know that it doesn't even say you have to be convicted of a felony. So I'm just throwing that out there. Now, had the young man been given the death sentence, he wouldn't have had any requirement of all. He'd be in isolation, and he'd just be waiting for the day. I think they use lethal injection in Florida. He'd have to be waiting for the day they lethally injected him. Now, this story is about vengeance because apparently Julio was disrespecting members of their family who had died in gang wars. So these particular guys, not all of them, I think they were friends, but I don't believe they all were related to the person, but I think they were all cool with the person that Julio, and I mean, yo, he urinated on somebody's grave. I mean, I don't know. He was getting the attention he asked for. He got the attention he asked for. Because I don't know how you do that and not expect it to be a massive, massive, you know, retaliatory strike at some point. You know, especially with today and how today people move, right? But the vengeance part of it, you know, them planning it, them celebrating it. They were walking down in the streets of Tampa Bay with champagne flutes, drinking Don Julio, sending messages talking about their thirst has been quenched. You know, bro, now, you know, ironically, one of the Murphy brothers, I forget which one, he was in court laughing the whole time because when they were receiving their sentences, the dude Sean started crying. He started calling them all kinds of bees and saying you ain't really a rider and you ain't a real one and this, that, and the other. Like, then they, you know, come to find out that young man had, I'm gonna call him young man, he's about almost 30. But he has some cognitive difficulties, I'll just say that, right? But I want to go to another case. And I want y'all to check this out, right? This case is something that was so disgusting. I shared it with the good doctor, Dr. Tiasan Johnson, did an excellent breakdown on this particular case. This happened in Texas, Houston, Texas, and the case was tried in Harris County. I want y'all to listen to this craziness, and then just tell me, you know, and then we'll get into the nuts and bolts because this short clip doesn't explain it all, so I'll fill in the blanks, and then we'll get into it.
Yeah, Gina, today's developments really fill in the blanks about the alleged motive behind the killings. Though she wasn't there when a mom, dad, and daughter were murdered, investigators say Alexis Williams is just as responsible because they say she planned the attack. The victim's family tells us they plan to be in court in the morning to see Williams for themselves.
If that's the consequence of dating this defendant, nobody in Harris County is safe.
It was bond denied this evening for 29-year-old Alexis Williams on all three counts of capital murder. She is also charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. They are the same charges her childhood friend Xavier Davis faces, but hers came months later.
We were looking for who sent this murderer into that home. And through the diligent work of HPD's Homicide Division, in conjunction with our office, we were able to determine that Alexis Williams is the woman that did that. Alexis Williams is the reason that horror was visited upon that family.
According to Houston police, Davis went to the family's apartment on Fondren in June 2021 and shot to death parents Danyavia Lagway and Gregory Carhey before turning to 6-year-old Harmony, killing her and wounding her 10-year-old sister. Police say she played dead to survive. Her baby brother was not shot. Investigators believe Williams, angry after breaking up with Danyavia, put it all in motion, telling Davis there would be cash in the apartment. Prosecutor Sean Teer says cell phone records cemented the charges.
Cell phone records that actually show that she was in contact with Xavier Davis during the murders. She was on FaceTime through portions of the murder with Xavier Davis. He was with her at her apartment 30 minutes before these murders occurred. So there's no reason that she shouldn't face the exact same charges that Xavier Davis does.
Williams was not the alleged gunman.
In court, the public defender pointing out Williams is not accused of pulling the trigger. The hearing officer coming back with a wide no-contact list. She was bold, she said, in the weeks following the family's murder.
I'm ordering no contact with any members of the family or decedents because it apparently went down that the defendant attended the funeral service of these victims that she helped to kill.
Jessica Willey, ABC 13, Eyewitness News.
Yeah, y'all heard it right. Now, let me fill in the blanks. So apparently there was a lesbian relationship off and on for several years with Alexis Williams and I believe, what is the lady's name? Let me see. Oh, give me a second. I hate to normally have all this right there. Danyavia Lagway. Okay. Danyavia Lagway. That was the, she was in a relationship with her. Apparently she had children with, and she was already married to another, another brother or to a brother. And so she broke off things with Alexis Williams. Alexis Williams then went and conspired for a week with a childhood friend, Xavier Davis, and who just gotten out of jail about a month prior. Right? He was only out of jail about a month prior, didn't have any money. He was living with a girlfriend. She conspired with him. They went to a strip club earlier that day. She conspired with him to pull off this tragedy, right? She was FaceTiming him the whole time. She was FaceTiming him the time he carjacked somebody. Then he went to the apartment, rang the bell. Danyavia answered the door. She had a baby in her hand. He grabbed the baby by the head, by the hair, and threw the baby across the room. Put a gun to the baby and then threw the baby across the room. Shot her husband first. All right. I believe his name was Gregory. I don't want to mess up the name, so I'm just going to. Y'all gonna have to look this one up because this it was just sick because he shot the husband, then he shot the girlfriend, the ex-girlfriend. He went and shot a 6-year-old girl that was just sitting there. There was a 10-year-old and a 1-year-old baby crawling across the floor. The girls had their hands up over their heads. He shot one of the girls. Bullet went through her hands and hit her in the head. So you got 3 dead people there already. He went and shot the 10-year-old sister. She put her arms up, but fortunately for her, one of the bones in her forearm stopped the bullet. But she played dead and she covered up her 1-year-old brother. Waited for this lunatic to scavenge the whole apartment because he was promised some money. That was one of the reasons why he accepted the hit. Grabbed $3,000 out of there and left. The young girl, brave, waited until he left, heard the footsteps, him running down the steps and leaving the apartment complex. She got up, picked up her 1-year-old brother. Now, keep in mind, she's still shot in the arm. Locked the door and FaceTimed her grandmother, who learned of this horrible ordeal. You know, through FaceTime and her granddaughter. I can't fathom, like, so let's be clear about something, right? Oh, and by the way, somebody had called the cops the next day. They said they had a tip on who to find and where to find the killer. I wonder who that was. I wonder who dropped that, who dropped that dime, who made that phone call. They knew that he wasn't necessarily sharp enough. Oh, they knew he wasn't sharp enough to have done this on his own. And they knew that because right after he did the killing, he went across town and burnt the car up, right? This dum-dum left a cell phone in the car. His cell phone, it was in his mother's name, but his pictures, family pictures, everything's in the cell phone. He leaves that in the damn car. So they pulled it out, pulled all the pieces, so they knew he was on the phone with somebody else during the time of the shooting. It took them 8 months to figure out, because, you know, people use those encrypted apps on their phone. It took them 8 months to figure out who he was on the phone with, but they already suspected it was her. Once they had the proof, that's when they finally brought her in. 8 months later. This sick woman went to, not only did she set this up, watched it happen on FaceTime, she then got dressed and went to all of the funerals. You know how sick you have to be to do that? Widow and trying to live her regular life, you know, as a stud out here in the world. But I'm one of the reasons I focused on this, right, is because the video, the initial video that I saw that covered this, they introduced Alexis in terms of her role, but they spent a lot more of the time focusing on the deviant nature of what's this dude's name? Xavier Davis, right? They spent a lot more time focusing on him. They went through his childhood. They talked about him being a criminal at the age of 11. How he was in and out of the juvenile justice system till he turned 19. Then involved in shootouts and got back in there. So he just got out of jail at the age 26. I mean, 20. I believe it was like 24, 25 at that particular time. Because he's like 28 now. This happened in 2021 in Houston, Texas, Harris County. But there's nothing about the background. There's nothing about identifying the sick nature of a person who was actually connected to the victims. And it's just amazing to me, because when we start talking about violence in the black community, and like I said, once again, shout out to Dr. Tiasan Johnson, who's helping us develop a vocabulary to deal with a lot of these things. We have terms called dog leashing in the black community, where black women will typically call their sons or somebody else to go straighten a man out or put him in his place. And then we have like blue leashing, right? Where, you know, law enforcement is called. You know, I get mad at you, I'm going to pretend that you beat me up, and I'm going to call law enforcement to put you in your place. There used to be a saying back in the day, black man, if you don't get it together, I'm going to call the man and straighten you out. Right? So those are the things that are taking place now. And when you combine those things, you get a term that was beautifully described as black leashing. And it's when sort of like you're not necessarily calling the police, but you're calling the criminal element, somebody who's going to perform a crime. You know they're going to perform a crime, right? And you're sending them to perform a crime. You're aiming and directing them at other black people, specifically other black men. Now, let's not mistake the fact that this is domestic violence between, you know, two same sex a same-sex former lesbian couple. But it won't be identified as this when we start citing the statistics. And when everybody wants to talk about the dangers that black men present, we leave out. We leave out the instigators who may not be men. We don't want to talk. We sort of have a problem identifying that. We sort of see their humanity. We try to look for angles. We try to look for, you know, we want to address this psychologically speaking. What state of mind were they in? But you ordered the hit. You planned the hit. You tried to throw a rock and hide your hands. And a lot of women do that in our community, and it never sticks. Because even the men have a hard time identifying this, rationalizing this. But as a man, he should have known better. You talk to a criminal who, dude, this is his life. What did you think he was going to do? Down on his luck, fresh out of jail with no bread, probably no, definitely no opportunities to work. And, you know, just one look at his brother, you could tell he was about that life. But this is circumstances, this circumstance, the Fulio circumstance. It's just showing the bittersweet, you know, this is what we identify as the bittersweet vengeance. Because they thought they were going to get away with it. And they didn't. But they've destroyed so many lives in the process. What you saw happening, that war in Iran right now, bittersweet for Israel, whose country was decimated by this war. And now they're not going to get the vengeance they were seeking. Even though I don't even know why they got vengeance. I mean, I know why, but, you know, a lot of that's based in the, you know, the irony is a lot of that's based in the same mindset and concepts that led to the first Holocaust that we all talk about. Thinking that one group of people on this planet was more superior than the other, and seeing another group of people as an existential threat to their existence. So we have to take them out before they come get us. That's the Israeli part of that. I'm not even going to get into the Zionist Illuminati part of that. But all these things seem to come full circle. So one, you know, I pray for the survivor, the surviving children. There was an 8-year-old brother that was away with other family members that day, and the 10-year-old. So now you have a 10-year-old sister. Well, she's 14 now, so the 8-year-old brother would be about 12. You have teenagers and preteens who have to live with this horrible tragedy in their lives. Meanwhile, globally speaking, we're going to have to deal with the horrible atrocities that's happening overseas. And I didn't even get into the other part. Pay attention now, because there's threats of nuclear war brewing in Eastern Europe with the NATO countries, Russia, and the Ukraine war. So pay attention to the news. Get your news offline, or get your news through alternative circuits, services. Alternative sources, excuse me. Don't trust mainstream media. They bought and paid for it just like Congress is. Many of them are already owned by clandestine operations. Or, you know, come over here and I'll tell you a little bit of something about a little bit of something. Well, with that said, family, thank y'all for tuning in. Went around the world today. Hopefully you were able to keep up. But, you know, take care of yourselves, family. As I always say, war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And with that, I am out of here.